Welcome to The Ripcord Moment, a podcast focused on empowering owners to achieve their perfect landing, their perfect exit. For most owners, the majority of their net worth is tied up in their business. Yet many owners struggle to create a plan that maximizes the value of their business with their personal goals and personal financial plan. Joe Cetu is the host of The Ripcord Moment. He is a partner and senior VP with Morton Capital, an independent wealth management firm responsible for $2 billion in assets. As a trusted advisor for over 20 years, he guides owners through the exit planning process by leveraging his unique skill set as a chartered financial analyst, certified financial planner, and certified exit planning advisor. Now here's Joe with The Ripcord Moment.
Business owners are today's American heroes. They innovate. They create jobs. They believe they can create a better future for their families and our country. So much attention is given to the start of the business, the idea, the technology, the fundraising, yet much less to the exit, as if it will magically take care of itself. When they do go to exit the business, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event. There is no do-over. Yet we see so many owners are ill-prepared to make this jump. This podcast is focused on learning from those entrepreneurs and team of advisors who have made the jump and sharing their best ideas with you. So when you're ready for your ripcord moment, you can execute and hit your perfect landing. Welcome to the Ripcord Moment. I'm your host, Joe Cetu. Today, we are joined by Mikey Taylor. He's a former professional skateboarder turned entrepreneur, and he was a founder of St. Archer's Brewing Company. And after a successful exit there, he's now turned to being a real estate entrepreneur. Mikey, welcome to the Ripcord Moment. I'm really excited to have our discussion today.
Joe, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So walk us through how after years of being a professional skateboarder and having a successful career there, you started St. Archer's Brewing Company.
Not the normal path for a skateboarder. But, you know, one thing that I learned as a skateboarder is how to look at kind of the world differently. Like, our whole job is created because instead of using a handrail to walk downstairs, we figured out a way to skateboard on it, right? Like, you get so used to seeing something that's meant to be done one way and finding another way to do it. And also as skateboarders, it's so individual based, right? Like, you have to think about the trick you want to do, how you want it filmed. You have to call the filmer or organize the photographer. So I have this belief that skateboarders are actually good entrepreneurs because a lot of the skills we learn as skaters do apply in business. I just wasn't sure how that really played until I started my own. And basically, I didn't go to college and had this idea that I was never going to make real money after skateboarding, because without going to school, I wasn't going to have access to that type of opportunity. So I always had it in my head that I had to do it myself.
Yeah.
And the brewery idea came randomly. I got a call from a friend who wanted me to start a sunglass company. I happened to be with another friend. I got off the phone, asked his opinion. And he said, dude, sunglasses, everybody does sunglasses in skateboarding. Like, it'd be cool to do something that's never been done in our world. And 3 hours later, he randomly threw out like beer. Like, we should do beer.
And I was, do you just like have a natural passion for beer? Or is it just because it was different that you were drawn to that sort of challenge?
You know what? No, I didn't have a passion for beer. I drank beer, not even a ton, but one thing that I liked right when he said it was no one had ever done that in our industry.
Right.
Like, it was so shocking that my interest went, whoa, wait a minute.
It's, and like, then, just blew up right there. You're like, okay, I gotta look into this.
Right. It was the shell. It was like the shock factor, like, whoa.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as we started talking about it, craft beer was going through this mega growth moment. And it was like, wait a minute, there's an opportunity happening in that industry. In our world, it's never been done. Dude, maybe there is something here. That mixed with us being a little bit naive and not having done anything like this, I don't think we really realized the scope of work that was going to go in. Mm-hmm. So we were just like, dude, three skaters, let's go for it.
That's right.
We went for it.
Well, and that's how, like, probably you with, I love the analogy you just gave earlier about like how you look at the world differently, how naturally because of that different view of the world translates into an entrepreneurial spirit where, right, entrepreneurs are trying to think about how things have never been done before or solving a problem in a way that maybe other folks just don't naturally look at it.
Yep.
So you launch into this, you have a successful business, you built evidently a very successful brand that ultimately I believe was acquired by one of the majors. Walk us through a little bit about, for you, what was the most surprising thing about an exit?
The most surprising thing, I think, for me is that it didn't feel like anything that I imagined it feeling like. Like,
okay,
you know what I'm saying? Like, well, let me take a step back. In skateboarding, when you sold a business, that was perceived as whack. Like, that was selling out.
Like, selling out.
It was bad, right?
Yeah. So there was, you're one of those guys.
Exactly. So there was this idea of like, oh my gosh, if we sell, are we going to get backlash? But also, like, when we raised money for St. Archer, it was all of our friends and family. So there was like this mixed emotion playing of like, dude, people are going to kind of, you know, attack us. But like, all of our friends and family, like, this is going to be the biggest blessing to sell a company and then be able to give them the return that we were able to. And then what I thought it was going to feel like for me, like, we just sold a company, I'm going to make all this money. All three of them were different feelings than what I expected. The giving money back to our investors, which were family and friends, I thought it was just going to be like this happy, like high five. It was like so emotional, like tears, like we were crying in joy. It was unreal. The feeling that I had when I received the money, I thought I was going to be more excited about it. It actually had the opposite effect. I was like all of a sudden fearful, which I wasn't expecting. And well, then
let's unpack that real quick, man. I want to pause there because you've thrown out a couple of really good nuggets here. What you were anticipating, and I think it's natural human instinct, right? Where we think, oh my gosh, I'm going to run into this pot of money. All my problems will be solved. I can do whatever I want. You had sort of the antithesis of this where you were experiencing fear that you weren't expecting. Fear around what?
Okay. So prior to the exit and being a pro skateboarder, I was very comfortable taking risk and I was always in growth mode, right? What mm-hmm. can I do to move forward? How can I build? How can I build? When St. Archer sold, all of a sudden it was like I went into like maintenance mode. Oh, how do I not lose this? It's like I all of a sudden became this like, I was more concerned with losing it and less focused on building. And wow. I wasn't expecting that challenge. I thought I was going to maintain on this strategy of how do I keep growing? And I had to work through that. And I wasn't prepared for it. Like I am not naturally like that. So yeah. That was kind of a shocker to me.
That must have been a little bit of a shocking feeling, right? It's almost like those sports teams you see, like they're ahead at halftime. They get into I'm a football guy, third and fourth quarter. And all of a sudden they're playing not to lose. And what happens? The other team comes back and beats them.
That's exactly right.
For other owners who might go through something like this, what were some of the things that they had to do to help work through that emotion?
So for me, and part of my story, I was blessed with just great guidance around me. I've always been surrounded by people that truly are smarter than myself. And so I had a real good built-in trust with them. So I had people that would tell me what was really going on as opposed to yes men around me. Mm-hmm. So typically you're a pro athlete, you surround yourself with people who build you up, right? Hype guys. That was not my thing. I always wanted to be around people that would keep it real with me and would check me when I got out of line. And one thing I had in that area was like, okay, dude, let's maintain the plan. And then I had somebody to kind of work this out with, like, hey, dude, so like, why am I like tripping about this? Why am I worried about losing? Well, this is natural. This actually happens. Like if you see people that become millionaires for the first time, they actually become poor investors afterward because they right. switch from a strategy to an emotional decision. Mm-hmm. Dude, I had somebody just help me get off of that path, you know?
Okay. Yeah. So it was having an independent sounding board, your trusted advisory team who was able to sort of, you know, help you get out of your head yeah. things that potentially weren't really true.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That's absolutely right.
Back to the business briefly here. One of the things, again, with this idea of your brand that you guys were so successful in building, what, you know, with the majors that acquired you, it sounds like they didn't necessarily manage or evaluate the brand potentially as optimally as you would have if you were in their seat. So for other owners who have a strong brand, that's their real asset, talk to them about the importance of aligning themselves with a buyer who really understands the brand, because you guys went from this sort of Southern California skater culture following to really more of a mass market, I think, from what I understand. So what was that like?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So for whatever reason, brand builders, it's hard for a lot of these big companies to understand what makes a brand special. And when you get in the position of either bringing on a partner or somebody basically buying your company, you really have to make sure that they understand what they have in front of them, or they're going to truly let you keep doing what you're doing. Those are kind of the only two options you have, in my perspective, to maintain, you know, the magic behind why you are what you are. The hardest part, I feel, like when you're doing a deal with a larger company, is bigger corporations move slowly. You got to move this big old, you know, battleship in a sense.
It's behemoth of a machine, right?
That's right. With brands, you're trying to be on top of trends, and trends happen like that. So you have to be able to make decisions quickly, execute on those decisions, and get them into the market before you're passed up by everybody else.
Right.
And when you start working in the corporate dynamic, somebody comes up with an idea, it takes you 4 months to get approval on that idea, another 2 months to build it out. By the time you launch it, two
ship has sailed.
That's right. Yeah. And that kills your brand. And so you just got to be careful with that. And I would say the other thing, a lot of buyers come in selling you on this idea that they let you do your thing. And then kind of the partnership happens and then they don't let you do your thing. You just be careful of that. I would say try to create as many boundaries in a sense, or whatever you can put into your agreement if you can, to allow you to maintain the thing that kept your business or your brand special.
Well, on that point, were there certain things that you and your partners did, or maybe with hindsight, wish you would have done to continue to allow that autonomy? What sort of structural things potentially should be built into the agreement, or just into the overall deal?
Well, I want to be careful to say we're blessed to have had MillerCoors buy our company. I don't think MillerCoors was the right buyer for our company. They just, I don't think they totally understood what they had. So I think on our end, what we could have done different is probably went with a different company that really understood how to grow this kind of magic moment we were kind of riding.
Yeah.
You know, it was just not the right partnership. I think it was that simple.
Well, you still had a successful exit, but in terms of ultimately growing the legacy of the brand further beyond what, you know, that core audience you had done.
I'll tell you what, like, I think ego wise, like, it, you know, you sell the company and then it stops, you know, being special, like, ha ha ha, kind of. But that's actually not what happens. Like, you want to see your baby grow. You want to see it become this massive thing. And when you don't see it, it actually hurts, even though we don't have any involvement with it. So I think the legacy play, even if you have no, you know, monetary upside in what's about to happen, dude, it holds weight.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, you worked your butt off to create this thing. Like, you want to see it succeed.
Oh yeah, naturally. I mean, the stories I hear from most of the owners, they talk about this being like their baby, their child, because they poured so much of their soul into it that it really is, it is their legacy.
Yeah, that's right.
Any other pearls of wisdom related to brand management, related to the exit planning that owners need to contemplate here?
Oh, that's a good question. Something that we were told early on, which I think was really beneficial with us, is to have the exit or have the end goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So know what you're doing prior to doing anything so that you can make sure everything aligns in the direction you want to head. That was a lot of wisdom shared upon us when we started this thing. And even, you know, when you get into your marketing, something to be mindful of is some of these bigger brands, whoever those buyers are that might be driving this, the premium up or the multiple up, don't create something that isn't desirable or, you know, too controversial or too edgy, or don't like edge your way out of a buyer. Mm-hmm. And that can happen in brand. It's like when you're trying to create something special for maybe the culture, dude, they're into like raw stuff. Like, you know, and sometimes it's so raw that like a business doesn't want to get behind it. So you kind of become culturally cool, and have no way of getting out of the business you built.
Yeah. So it sounds like you got to, it's walking a fine line there between what is culturally and trendy and whatnot for your micro market. But if you're trying to move upstream into a more mass market, you may have to sort of take the edge off a hair to balance that, as it sounds like was what you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Got it. Well, Mikey, we're going to pause just for a brief moment to get in a word from our sponsor, but we'll be right back.
As a part of our commitment to empowering business owners, we've partnered with sponsors that make this podcast possible. We've asked them to share a little bit about their ripcord moment and how they're helping owners hit their perfect landing.
Morton Capital is a wealth advisory firm with the goal of helping families get the most life out of their wealth. We believe the most successful clients are those that have identified what is most important: family, travel, financial freedom, or protecting their nest egg. We then build a strategy that results in them spending more time doing the things they love. This is also our goal for our firm and our team. We are business owners ourselves and have experienced the ripcord moment twice, once in 2006 and then again in 2013. The first landing ended up a little too bureaucratic, with a lack of flexibility in how we ran our business and served our clients. The second transaction was much more successful because we focused on the things we valued: independence, opportunity, control, and the ability to run a business where people truly love coming to work. Our team today is stronger than ever, and our people are empowered to build strategic, innovative, and thoughtful plans that allow our clients to get more life out of their wealth.
And we're back with Mikey Taylor, former founder and CEO of St. Archer's. And we're talking about his transition to from skating to serial entrepreneur. And Mikey, maybe we can take the conversation a little bit now. So now you've exited, you've made several exits, right? From skating to which you had a very successful career in, to the beer world, which you sold to a major. And then now you've transitioned again to a real estate entrepreneur. And I want to talk a little bit about your personal journey in sort of identity recreation, because you've had to do it now multiple times. And it's something owners have to contend with once they, you know, no longer are the owner of that business and it's no longer their sort of day-to-day thing. What's that process been like for you?
Not easy at all. It's real easy for us to wrap our identity and our purpose into our craft or our business. And when that craft goes away, dude, you kind of are left with this feeling of like, who am I? It's hard to be able to answer that question. And it's hard to be comfortable with yourself without having the front-facing business or career, et cetera. The other thing too that I see is even people who aren't entrepreneurs, just people who have a career, if that career changes, they have to reinvent themselves in a lot of ways. If they retire, reinvention. So it's something that is actually common in a lot of us. I just had to go through it maybe in an earlier kind of moment of time. It was hard. The thing I could say is I was trying to fix the feeling I was having with creating a business. So, you know, I'm no longer a pro skateboarder. We sell St. Archer. And all of a sudden I'm like, who am I? Like,
right.
I'm known as Mikey Taylor, the skater. Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, but I don't even have the business anymore. Like, what are people going to think of me? What are they going to view me as? And so I was desperately scrambling with an idea to create a business to solve the void. What I found is I had to start being comfortable with who I am with nothing.
Uh-huh.
So then I could create the company that didn't have my identity baked into it. It was just there to complement what my actual identity and purpose was. That took time for me. That took probably a year of a lot of, what would you call it?
It sounds like soul searching.
That's right. It was a lot of soul searching. It was a lot of soul searching, reflecting, and trying to answer, I think, the core question to all of our lives. Why am I here?
Yeah.
You know, and I had to go through that when I was reinventing myself.
Do you feel like you have a crystallized answer to that now at this stage of your life?
I think I do. Now, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, I thought I did then too. But I think I do now. And before I say that, the reason why I had to find out what was really kind of made me feel confident is because I already had a really big social media following.
Yeah.
And they already knew me as one thing. And I knew it was going to be a real difficult road to transition that whole following into what I was going to do next. And I had to make sure I was prepared to handle the backlash.
And right, because not necessarily everybody's going to want to see you in a different light, right? Because it's changed for them.
That's right. And I felt like if I was doing it for the wrong reasons, mm-hmm. then I was going to fold under pressure of being attacked. So yeah. once I knew I was doing it for the right reasons, I felt equipped to be able to handle the backlash and keep pushing through it, no matter how long it's going to be until I build this next thing. So right. I think that's why I spent so much time on the, what the heck am I doing? You know?
Yeah. Getting clarity around that. Well, if you're comfortable sharing, what, how would you define that at this stage of your life?
Okay. So the best way I can explain it is I have this idea that when I die, I'm going to meet God and he's going to present to me the life he envisioned me living. And I started becoming terrified with living a life that was so far from what he expected me to live.
Yeah.
And so in that vision, I kind of created this purpose of my goal is to chase the true purpose that he wants my life to be. And any business I do, it's me doing it my highest calling. Any relationship I have, mm-hmm. it's me doing it my highest calling. So that in any kind of aspect of life, I am chasing, you know, the vision that he has for me, if that makes sense.
I totally make sense because it resonates with me personally in the sense that like I had read something probably 10 years ago that said something to the effect, I will meet my future self. And the question was, who will I meet in the future? And that prompted me to start really examining how I was living my life. And to this day, it's like, I feel like my mission is to become the very best version I can be of myself based on what the creators, you know, sort of endowed me to do. And then yeah. using my skill set to help really empower others to have the very best life that they can have. And I take that to my, you know, my job here yep. every day at Morton Capital, managing their wealth. But what you're saying resonates so much with me.
And I think just the add and echo into what you said, because it's spot on. Prior to this, when I was skating, I was doing everything with the identity of I am pro skateboarder.
Yep.
Now, even with my company, at my company, the view is not I am entrepreneur, you know, president of our company. It is, how do I be my best self in this yeah. opportunity that's with me right now?
Yeah.
And so whatever happens with this business, if the business goes away, if the business exits, I'm not stripped of my identity. Now it just moves over to, great, now I have a new opportunity to drive all of this forward in the next calling, you know?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got no place of integration.
Yeah.
Which I think is where many of us strive to go in our lives. Well, Mikey, I always call this the ripcord moment because I'm a firm believer that when an owner exits their business, right, it's like jumping out of a plane. They have to have that parachute, that ripcord cannot fail if they're going to hit their landing. So let's talk a little bit about the action items that you would recommend owners think through and work through as they're working towards their perfect exit. What would be two things that, you know, you've kind of done that you would say, look, these are action items that an owner really needs to do if they want to have some semblance of a successful exit.
Okay, so we're talking about prior to the exit.
Yeah, I think as they're approaching, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so prior to the exit, one action item, don't talk about the deal until the deal's done. I know everybody says that, but when you get the offer, I'm telling you, it's so hard not to tell everybody about it. Right. I would actually have one action item. Don't say a word until it's done.
So you're saying maintain a little bit of privacy and don't count your eggs before they hatch.
Don't count your eggs. Dude, and this is the thing. We all know that. We're all told that. Once you're put in a position, it's almost like it goes out the window. You want to tell everybody. Be prepared for that and fight it at all costs. I really think keeping it as quiet as possible is the best way to do it.
Give me some color, give our audience some color about, because naturally you're going to have to work with hopefully you're working with your accountant, your legal team, some members of the team. So there are people you have to tell.
Okay. So what I mean is when you start going through the due diligence phase, you get an offer. Sometimes that might take 9-12 months, yeah. maybe 6 if you get through it fast, right? Going into it, you feel like it's a done deal. It's going to happen. What I mean by it is there's a lot of cases where the deal actually will not happen and it sure. goes away. Yeah. So what I mean by like, don't kind of celebrate before it happens. Don't get too excited and tell the world it's going to happen at a point where it still might not.
Okay. I appreciate the clarity there. That makes sense.
You know, and honestly, now I've seen it happen so many times. That's why I say it. I don't think it's good. Two, I think the second action item would be the reinventing yourself for the what's next. It's going to take time to figure out. So if you're going to sell your company and you're going to be there for a while, just know that there's going to be a transition and it's going to be a new thing. If that new thing ends up being fitting, great, ride that out. If you're like me, it's probably going to be challenging and there's going to be a point where you're going to be ready to build your next business. If that is going to be you, give yourself time to reflect, decompress, and get back into this kind of creative zone of bringing new ideas to life, as opposed to I have a business and now all my focus is at scaling, right? It's just a different type of process. Give yourself time. Don't feel like you need to figure out overnight. The best thing to do is put yourself, you know, don't put so much stress on yourself to figure it out that like you're removing all of the opportunity of something special coming to your mind.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're saying is enjoy the process. Give it some thought ahead of the exit, but naturally, you know, be aware that there's going to be this transition period, right? Because for some owners, they're required to work in the business. They have a, you know, either an earnout or they're tied up to make the deal work. But from a personal standpoint, they're going to go through this sort of, I don't know if I want to call it a mourning process, but a detachment process from their old business to creating that new identity. And like you said, reflect, be alone, figure out what their second calling is. And allow for that creativity. So
that's right.
Mikey, great pearls of wisdom here. I think we're going to, on that note, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I want to thank you for taking the time to share your story. It's a fascinating one, a fascinating journey. I'm interested to see where your real estate endeavors go. If people want to reach out and get a hold of you, how might they do that if you're okay with it?
So if you're on any social media platforms, it's just my name, Mikey Taylor. I'll be the first to come up in all of them. So just search my name. I have a number on my Instagram that you can text me, get kind of a part of our community. And you'll be able to find anything I do from any of my platforms. So just find one.
You're out there on the social media platform. So
that's right.
Wonderful. Hey, Michael, look, thanks for taking the time to share your story. It was great connecting with you.
Joe, appreciate it, my man.
All right. This is Joe C2 signing off from the Ripcord Moment, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Ripcord Moment. If you'd like to connect, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or on email at jc2@mortoncapital.com. The information presented is for discussion and illustrative purposes only. The views and opinions expressed by the speakers are as of the date of the recording and subject to change. These views should not be relied on for financial, tax, or legal advice. You should consult with your attorney, financial professional, or accountant before implementing any strategies or transactions concerning your finances. Morton Capital is an SEC registered investment advisor. Assets under management data is as of 12/31/2019. The views expressed herein should not be relied on as investment advice and are not intended as a recommendation to buy or sell any type of security. There's risk of loss investing in securities, including loss of principal. Past performance is no guarantee of future results.